The 31st Senate District has been more blue than red over the past 30 years. While Republicans have picked up seats within the three assembly districts of the 31st Senate District, voters have elected Democratic senators for every term but one. Incumbent Kathleen Vinehout, an Alma Democrat, is vacating the office after 12 years, and the 31st is more open than ever. Vinehout's relatively narrow win in 2014 suggests that voters in the district may be contemplating a change. If that's the case, they have more choices than voters in any other of the 15 state Senate races. Three parties share the ballot in the 31st on November 6th. Today on the West Side, we talk with two of those three candidates, hopefully three of the candidates. The Democrat, the Green Party, and Republican have all been invited to the show, and we are hoping to speak with all three. So, we'll discuss their platforms, their qualifications, and as always, we'll take your calls. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side. Thank you for tuning in this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC and 88.7 WRFW. A quick overview of the 31st Senate District. It's in far west central Wisconsin and includes Assembly Districts 91, 92, and 93. It is comprised of parts of Pierce, Pepin, Dunn, Eau Claire, Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties. Traveling the boundaries of the district, you would encounter communities of all sizes, including part of Eau Claire, Aliva, Black River Falls, Melrose, Maiden Rock, Prescott, and many points in between. Now, to introduce today's guests, we welcome the candidates from the 31st State Senate District in no particular order. Jeff Smith is a Democrat from Eau Claire. For many years, he worked for and then owned a small family business. He served as the Town of Brunswick Chair from 2001 to 2007, then represented the 93rd State Assembly District from 2007 to 2010. Jeff Smith, welcome back to the West Side.
Glad to be here, Rich. Thank you.
Glad to have you. And also joining us in studio is Mel Pittman. He is a Republican from Plum City. He's a longtime farmer with over 40 years of experience in agriculture. He served on the Pierce County Board of Supervisors for more than 10 years, retiring this year to campaign for the 31st Senate. He ran for the seat back in 2014, but was defeated by then-incumbent Kathleen Vinehout. Mel Pittman, welcome back to the West Side.
Good morning, Rich. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And we've also invited Erin Camacho. She is the Green Party candidate from Fountain City. She grew up in Janesville before graduating from Winona State University. She serves on a board of directors for the Winona-Dakota Unity Alliance. We have invited her to the program. We have not heard from her today, and the attempts to reach her by phone have been unsuccessful. We're going to keep trying through the program so that we can make sure that all candidates are represented today. Listeners, you can call in now and speak directly with the candidates from the 31st Senate District. If you live in the 31st, you also live in the Assembly Districts of 91, 92, and 93. Besides your Assembly person, one of today's guests will be representing your interests in Madison for the next 4 years. So what's happening in your corner of the world? With three candidates to choose from, what factors are going into your decision-making? 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call to share your question or your comment. We welcome all callers. While the winner of the race will represent the 31st Senate, they also represent the entire state. So let us know what you're thinking. 1-800-228-5615. So as a matter of course, the first question is always the most basic, and it is, why should you be the person? Mel Pittman, I'll start with you. Why should you represent the 31st Senate District? What has driven you to run for a second time now, and what has qualified you for this seat?
Well, thank you for that question, Rich. I'm running because I'm really concerned about the direction of the state and our country in general. But, you know, having three children, two grandchildren, and many other people have children and grandchildren, I think it's important that we stay focused on where this country's going, where the state's going, the economic issues, some of the social issues. I want to have a good, decent life for my children and grandchildren and for other people's children, too. And what makes me qualified? You know, I've as Rich mentioned earlier, I've been a successful dairy farmer for the past 40 years. I've learned how to manage through the good times and bad. And anyone that's been involved in agriculture knows that, you know, we have pretty good price swings in the cycles that we go through. And, you know, in order to manage through those cycles, you got to be a pretty good business person and manage your dollars well. I think that speaks well for my ability to do work for the state of Wisconsin and represent this district in that manner. And also my experience on county board, where I've served for 12 years, had quite a bit of experience in a lot of different other committees, but in particular finance personnel. So where we did a lot of work with the budget and working with staff. So I think that makes me a pretty good representative for this district.
Thank you for that, Mel Pittman. Mel Pittman, again, is the Republican running in the race for the 31st State Senate District. Now we go to Jeff Smith, the Democrat. So, why are you running, and what makes you qualified to hold this seat?
Well, Rich, I, too, am really concerned about the direction of this state and this country. And as we know, there is one party that's been in the majority for a while, and a big cause of why I'm concerned about the direction of this state. So we need balance. We need pragmatism. We need leadership. We need backbone to stand up to the corporations, to stand up for regular people. And I consider myself regular people. I'm a lifetime resident of Eau Claire County. Grew up in the city of Eau Claire, and ran a business, small business, window cleaning business that I grew from a two-man operation to 22 employees, which gave me a great opportunity to serve my community, which turned into what really is my passion as it becomes. And so that said, I like you mentioned, I was town chair of my township, and I was very active in our school district and in statewide. I was even on a task force for education for the governor back in 2003. But every time I did something, I realized I had to be a policymaker to be able to make change. And so I ran for that seat in 2004 and won it in 2006, the state assembly seat, which was a surprise at the time for many people, not for me. I think I proved myself in the legislature of being a leader, someone who crossed lines, spoke and listened to everybody, and made things happen. And I want to go back and make things happen.
Thank you for that, Jeff Smith. A reminder, we're talking with the candidates for the 31st, running for the 31st State Senate District. There are three candidates. Two of them are joining us on the program right now. They are Jeff Smith. He's the Democrat from Eau Claire, and Mel Pittman is the Republican from Plum City. They're in the studio with me right now. We are hoping that Aaron Camacho, the Green Party candidate from Fountain City, can join us. If you're listening, Aaron, you can call in at 800-228-5615. And you know what? That goes for everybody. If you have a question or comment for any of the guests on today's program, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. Jeff Smith, I'll stay with you. You know, we're always talking about, you know, you both mentioned that you're concerned about the direction of the state. So if there's any one thing that stands out, what is at stake in this election? I mean, some people are saying, well, this is a proxy election that has to do with national issues, the president, for example. You know, other people say it, no, it's a local. So what is at stake for the state in the 31st election, if they, depending on how they vote?
You know, my view is the opposite. I believe that the press and the media and all the attention on the White House and Congress draws away from what's really important, which is what your state legislature and your county board and your school boards, your city councils, what they are elected to do. I think what's at stake is access to health care. I hear it all the time at all the doors. They're really afraid and fearful that they're going to lose their access to health care. The other thing I hear all the time is the concern that our schools are in trouble. Our public schools are in a place where with the special interests grabbing the money, with vouchers taking the money away from public schools, with a majority party that favors that happening, that public schools are in real trouble, and we need to change the formula that supports our rural schools, especially those small rural districts are at risk. So I think those are really important issues. But bottom line, what I always hear, in the end, is that they're sick and tired of the partisanship. They're sick and tired of things not getting done and of the fact that it's getting done for the big money and not for the regular people.
Mel Pittman, I want to ask you the same question. I mean, what are you hearing from the people, you know, that are behind the doors that you're knocking on? What is at stake in this election from your point of view?
Well, there's a couple issues that come up quite regularly. One of them is our infrastructure, our roads, bridges, broadband service. You know, the businesses I talk to also talk about the labor market, you know, labor shortages, people's willingness or inability to work. So those are probably two of the bigger ones that I've heard about. And when we talk about how we're going to fix this problem and whatnot, well, let's take a step back to the year 2010 when the Republicans got into control. We had a big deficit, a $3.6 billion deficit, and some changes needed to happen in order to get ourselves out of that because we were in a recessionary time within our economy, both in the nation and our state. So, and as a dairy farmer, I can understand that fact that, you know, you need to tighten your belt. You need to make some changes in order to make it through those tough times so we can get to the better times. And that's why, you know, some of the infrastructure had gotten left behind for a period of time. Education had ended up taking some cuts in order to balance the budget and get us out of that hole. And at this point, I'm very much in favor of getting some more dollars out here so we can take care of our infrastructure. We need to get some more dollars in our classroom so that teachers and students can have a better education. Those are two of the things that I hear the most about. And trying to get these, you know, unemployment rates are quite low, but still there's still quite a few people that either choose not to work or they're working on a part-time basis because it's more advantageous for them to do that. We have to put incentives out there to help these people get our economy going stronger so that, you know, the stronger our economy is, the better it is for everybody else to get the services they need.
If I could follow up, Mel Pittman, on the infrastructure issue, and you'll both have a chance to respond to this, and then I want to talk about health care as well, because I agree, those seem to be, from my perspective even, the two things that I hear most when I talk to random voters on the street. So, infrastructure-wise, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the need, or some people perceive the need to raise revenues to adequately fund roads and bridges. The DOT in the state has done a lot of cost-saving maneuvers. One of the things that they recently did is a policy called Replace in Kind, where you're replacing bridges with what is there and not expanding them, not, you know, adding any frills to them. The counties say that this could cost us more in the long run. So what I keep hearing from people in the transportation world is we need more revenue or a stable revenue source. To some people, that means gas tax. The tolls has come up, mile-based fees. Do you think that we need to raise revenues, whether it be through a tax, registration fees, or anything? Because you're seeing some of the local governments pass wheel taxes, Eau Claire County, for example. So what's your thought?
Well, you're right. There's definitely a need for more dollars at the local level, whether it be the towns, and the counties, and cities. And so some of the areas that I'm thinking about working on initially is general purpose revenue. You know, if our economy stays strong, there's a good opportunity that we can get some more general purpose revenue back out to the local municipalities. The governor had recently, in the last budget cycle here, gotten quite a bit of dollars. I don't remember the exact amount, but out to the local municipalities. But the trouble is, quite a few of them have actually borrowed money. And so now they have debt service on top of keeping everything going. So we need to continue to get more money out to them. Vehicle registration might be an opportunity there to get a little more dollars in that way, too. And fuel tax. You know, I would say, you know, maybe a couple cents might work on fuel tax. But what's kind of really concerning, especially from where I live, you know, I'm 30 miles from Minnesota border, and in the last 2 weeks here, I did make a trip over there, and there was almost 20 cents a gallon difference. Minnesota fuel was 20 cents less than it was in Wisconsin here. And, you know, if we get out of line on fuel tax, people are going to buy it where it's the cheapest, and we're going to lose more dollars in the long run. So we have to be careful where we're going with that.
Thanks, Mel Pittman. So Jeff Smith, need to raise revenues for roads?
We always got to remember that Minnesota's registration fee is probably double ours is.
Much higher.
You know, so that's why they have less fuel tax. But we made a huge mistake in 2005, we being a previous legislature. I wasn't there at the time. So they, you know, they're cowards. And let's face it, politicians are cowards. They're not going to raise a tax on their own. This is how the rut we've fallen into, which is really sad because that's their job is to be sure that we're adequately funded for all of the services that they're responsible for. So, before 2005, because they are cowards, were smart enough before that to have automatic indexing. So they didn't have to raise the tax. It just automatically raised on its own to be sure that we had the money needed to support our roads and infrastructure.
But
2005, they let these conservative talk radio people in Milwaukee scream enough so that they gave in and they repealed that automatic indexing. And here we sit flat on a 2005 gas tax that is obviously has, you know, now caught up to us. And so we need to bring it back up to the level it should be and reinstate the automatic index. Now, that said, though, a lot has changed. We have a lot more fuel efficiency. We have electric cars. We have a lot of things happening. So I also think that looking at a value-based registration fee is really important. I think that's a lot of states are doing that. Why should somebody who has a $2,000 car pay the same flat fee as somebody who has a $50,000 vehicle? So, you know, they can pay more. So that's one of the things. And I think we really got to get creative. There's other ways I don't know yet. I think we should put a task force together and make it happen quickly and actually follow their direction, because we need to come up with something really innovative to how are we going to continue to support our infrastructure. Now, I consider infrastructure to be also broadband. I think that we can't leave it up to corporations to provide us high-speed broadband, because they're not going to do it. They just are not going to do it. Their bottom line, their fiduciary responsibility, does not even allow them to consider serving rural Wisconsin, like where Mel lives and where I live. We've got to come up a way, like they did for electrification of this country, to provide broadband for everybody, whether in your home, in your business. If we expect our next generations to live here and to thrive here, they have to have it. They have to be able to have that broadband access. They can even work out of their homes, start new businesses, you wouldn't want to live in this part of the state. Every time I drive around, especially what I call the West Coast, along that River Road and all that area, who wouldn't want to live there if they could? But they can't, because they need to get access to broadband.
If I could just follow up, and then I know that Mel Pittman wants to comment on this. So you both seem to be agreeing that there needs to be some more revenue going into roads, but you're also both, at its very most basic, you're both asking people to pay more right at a time when they might just feel like they're kind of climbing out of a bit of a rut. You know, the economy's doing better, people are taking home a little bit more money, depending, but you're asking for more, and isn't there going to be pushback to that?
Well, first of all, just on a side note, I would say people are not taking home more, but we can get
right,
into that.
Right, we will,
later.
I'm sure.
But yeah, I'm
right.
Sure we will. But I also would say that we're paying enough. The priorities being placed on the money that we're paying by our state legislature is what's really wrong. For instance, nearly $100 million are taken out of the transportation budget just to repair a road that runs between Illinois to the proposed Foxconn site, so we can get Illinois workers to their job. People need to be aware of that. So while our roads are crumbling and our towns and villages and counties are not able to afford to, because they're not getting their funding back to our local communities, they're sending it to southeastern Wisconsin to get Illinois workers to their job. Now so the next thing is we need to take the limits and the handcuffs off of our community elected officials as well. They've been for years, despite the campaign rhetoric, handcuffing our local officials who are elected by the same people who elect our legislators. They need to respect those local officials. They need to give them the opportunity to raise revenues if they need to, or to return our money to them as through shared revenues and through road shares so that they can do what they're elected to do.
So getting rid of revenue limits.
I would like to see that, because I trust our local officials, but I know that there's some argument for having some limits.
Mel Pittman, aren't you asking for more from people who might not feel like they've got it right now to improve?
That's why when I started all talking about revenue sources for roads, infrastructure, and whatnot, I talked about general revenue.
Yeah, GPR.
And that's my first choice, because I'm not in favor of raising a tax and to the people if I don't need to. You know, that's part of, you know, I disagree with Jeff in the sense that I think people are doing better financially right now than what they have been in the last 8 years. But all that said, you know, there's always a need for dollars somewhere. And, you know, with our economy, Wisconsin's economy has been doing better since 2010. But just prior to that, I just wanted to mention that I believe when Jeff was in the legislature, one of the last budgets that the Democrats balanced, they actually took money and borrowed money from the Highway Trust Fund to fund education, and then they borrowed money to try to keep up with the highway projects. You know, that wasn't necessarily a good deal either, because that was a short-lived situation that was going to be in trouble for down the road. But that being said, you know, the Republicans, when they got in control, they had a lot of changes that had to happen to make it work. So, as we talked about, you know, vehicle registration, maybe a little bit of tax. I'm not in favor of indexing it. If we would have kept indexing the fuel tax, we would probably be 15 cents by now, and that would have been a lot of money, and that would have put us way out of line with neighboring states. So, you know, like I said, maybe a couple cents I could support. And that value-based vehicle registration, I'm not sure I would go along with the value-based. I would look at it more, who's causing the wear and tear on the roads, that kind of a situation. Definitely in favor of improving broadband out there, because the critical part about broadband is if we have it available, we can keep businesses in our communities. And there's an issue with, if we don't have businesses in our communities, you know, the families aren't going to be living there, the employees won't be there, we won't need schools because the children won't be there if the families aren't there. So we have to have businesses in our communities so we can have families in our communities, and they will have children so that they'll have the need for education.
With that, let's take our first break here on the west side. We're talking with the candidates running, or two of the three candidates running for the 31st State Senate District. This is the 31st State Senate District candidate debate. The 31st is in far western Wisconsin. It includes parts of Pierce, Pepin, Dunn, Eau Claire, Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties. It also includes Assembly Districts 91, 92, and 93. If you live in places like Pepin, Stockholm, North Bend, Galesville, or Hager City, to name a few stops, you're in the 31st Senate District. And we'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We've got three callers right now, so our phone lines are full. We're going to start working through those calls right when we return. This is Westside.
Support for WPR comes from La Lingerie, an appointment-only fit house dedicated to providing bra fittings where women are pampered and work with experienced staff. Located in Madison or lalingerieshop.com. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, offering Mayo Clinic care as a choice during open enrollment for health insurance. More information is available at mayoclinichealthsystem.org/bestchoice.
Welcome back to the West Side. Today we're speaking with the candidates, two of the three, running for the 31st State Senate District seat. The winner will represent parts of Pierce, Pepin, Dunn, Eau Claire, Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties for a four-year term. I'm Rich Kramer. The candidates joining me in studio today are Mel Pittman. He's the Republican from Plum City, and Jeff Smith, he's the Democrat from Eau Claire. And Aaron Camacho was invited to the program, and there must have been some miscommunication, but Aaron Camacho, she's the Green Party candidate from Fountain City. Aaron, if you happen to hear this, you can call in at 800-228-5615, and we'll do our best to get you on the air. That number is the same for folks that want to call in with their thoughts, 1-800-228-5615. Now we go to Mark in Eau Claire. Mark, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay, good morning. I just wanted to say that a campaign and how it's run is an indication of the kind of energy that a person's going to put into the office. And no matter where I go in Eau Claire, and I have been doing a little bit of door knocking for all the Democratic candidates, they seem to know Jeff Smith. And Jeff is out there doing so many roadside events and listening. So listening has been a big part of his campaign, and that just really impresses me.
All right. Thanks for your thoughts. I appreciate that. So any care to comment, Jeff Smith?
Well, I did not put Mark up to that, so I don't know.
How much?
How much did you
give him?
But I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you.
Mel Pittman, any thoughts? I mean, you've been knocking doors, too, I would imagine. So have you been focusing on the city of Eau Claire or more rural areas, or what's been your strategy?
I've been focusing on the entire district. Of course, Jeff lives in Eau Claire almost, just outside the city, so he has a shorter travel time to get here, where I can spend an hour almost driving here and
sure.
an hour going back home. But the game plan is to reach out to as many voters as possible, knock on as many doors, and you know, let them know who the candidate is and who and what we stand for and what the concerns are from the people that are we're seeing.
All right, thanks for that, and thanks for the call, Mark. Now we go to Donna. Donna, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Rich. This is Donna, and I have a question for both candidates. I am a constituent of the 31st State Senate District, and my question is about ending childhood poverty. I'm a proud member of JONA, Joining Our Neighbors Advancing Hope, and our parent organization, our state organization, Wisdom, is one of four co-sponsors for the End Childhood Poverty campaign. And I have in front of me some statistics for the counties that these gentlemen are vying to represent. And as I look at an average of the poverty and the ALICE people, Asset Limited, Income Constrained, employed people who live not at the federal poverty level but slightly above it, it's approximately 40% in the counties that they represent. That means 2 in 5 people are in danger, are either in poverty or are in danger of being in poverty for any kind of emergency they may have.
Mm.
My question is, would the candidate be willing to take the initiative to pass legislation, lead legislation, that would lower childhood poverty in Wisconsin, even if this means going against what your political party wants? And this is a general question, and it covers many of the issues that you're talking about today. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Donna. Mel Pittman, I'll start with you since Jeff Smith started at the last one.
Well, first, thank you. And first of all, I would start out by saying this. Whether I was on county board, even though that's nonpartisan, there's always some partisanship there.
Sure.
I've always been an independent voice, and I will stand up for what I believe is right, irregardless of which parties associate it with it. So, and to talk about ending childhood poverty, that's a wonderful goal. But I think we're, you know, I think, if I remember right, President Lyndon Johnson wanted to eliminate poverty in our country back in the 1960s.
Yeah, the war on
poverty. War on poverty. And we haven't really made any progress on that. And I'll tell you why we haven't made any progress. We can help people a lot. We can give them a lot of assistance, a lot of aid. We can give families a lot of aid. But until they actually step up and help themselves, they're really not going to bring themselves out of poverty. It's the cold truth. What we need are what we really need are strong families in our communities. I talk about being a pro-family candidate. We need to do the things that will bring families together and make them more adhesive. Families where parents will take the responsibility for their children so that the children can know what a good parent they are. There's been a lot of children that have grown up in poverty situations and they've made themselves a good life, a wonderful life. You know, it takes effort, it takes willingness, it takes grit, and takes, you know, things that things that people that really want to make a difference and change their lives, they can do that. Many of them can. We can continue with assistance to these families, but until they're really willing to step up to the plate and help themselves, I don't see that we're going to change the poverty rate that's out here in our communities.
If I could just follow up, so is that then insinuating that people that are in poverty are there because they haven't tried hard enough or that they've made bad choices?
Part of it's the choices they make, but on the other hand, part of it is we need to help them see where some better choices are. And that's why I talk about being a family unit, what families are and how they can be supportive. Things aren't going to change if we don't help educate them. But if we just keep handing them a free meal, handing them a free things, I don't see that really being beneficial in the long run. It helps them today, but not necessarily tomorrow.
Teach a man to fish, I think, is the proverb there. So, Jeff Smith, what do you say to Donna and folks that want to see child poverty ended?
Well, thanks for the question, Donna. It makes me sad to hear what I just heard from Mel, but I'm very familiar with this program. We are partners with Citizen Action, the organization that I've been leading with Jonah in this initiative, because in Great Britain is sort of the model that this is following. And in Great Britain, they've cut child poverty in half, I believe. I don't have them right in front of me what the numbers were, in a fairly short period of time. And it isn't because they came up with programs. Is that the initiative is about forcing legislators to face the problem, not telling them how to fix it, but saying you need to set goals, you need to figure out when and how you're going to, that each time you have a budget and each time you have any possible legislation that affects children or affects poverty, you have that in your back of your mind that this is the goal we're trying to reach, so how are we going to reach it? We haven't done that before. Instead, we make the mistake of coming at these things with, here, this, we're going to tell you how you should fix it. Well, I don't think that's the way you should take, the angle you should take. I really like this initiative that Wisdom, which is the statewide organization over Jonah, has taken, and that is that just let's convince our legislators that something has to be done, set some goals by 2025, 2030, whatever those goals may be. But let me tell you my own personal story why this means a lot to me. It's what drove me into politics in the first place. When I was building my business and I was working 12 or 14 hours a day, my wife said, you know, once our children get to school, you're going to volunteer in the schools. And when I did that, because I followed my wife's advice, I always throw her under the bus for that. It's her fault. When I did that, it wasn't my children that I saw. It was all of these other children in that school, at Little Red School, that I thought, you know, I'm really privileged and my children are privileged and fortunate. We need to do other things to help all these other families to pull themselves out and to make their lives better, especially children who it's no fault of their own if they are in a position that they're in and they're struggling along, and every kid out there, when they're out in the playground, when they're in that school, they're like everybody else. It's when they go home that things change. And we need to be responsible, because we're all responsible for all our children, not just the families and not just the parents. We're all responsible as a community.
So to follow up and on the personal responsibility part, parents have certain responsibilities. Do you think, you said you disagreed with what, and it saddened you to hear what Mel Pippin said, but doesn't personal responsibility play a role in this?
Of course, but we have to give people the avenues and with which they can reach places which are going to pull them out of there. We can't just expect nobody who's even wealthy these days, for the most part, got there all on their own. It's always been a community that moves people forward and moves and makes progress.
Mel Pittman.
Yes, I'd just like to counter a little bit of what Jeff said. You know, it's good to say the legislature needs to do something, but we haven't heard any examples of what we really need to do. And it's easy to say, well, as a legislator, I'm going to take care of it, make a promise and whatnot. You know, I'd like to hear some real examples of what's going to actually work. But that's where I talked about, you know, families, empowering families, and, you know, teaching them along the way, whether we, you know, teach our children too when they end up going into the schools, and that early childhood development is really critical. And we've come a long ways in helping those children in early childhood development where they have access to that type of environment before they even enter into school. Those are all positive things. But, you know, when I knock on doors, and I've been in some of the neighborhoods where the people are not doing very well. I see what's out there. I understand. And, you know, a lot of them are struggling. And I'd like to put things in place to help them, but they have to take the initiative, too. If they don't have an initiative to help themselves, we can do anything. And I mean, we got to watch what we're spending dollars on. Bottom line is, you know, the budget is not unlimited revenue source. So,
Jeff Smith, very quickly.
Well, then let's start with raising that minimum wage to a living wage. I mean, let's make sure that they have the ability, that it doesn't come from the government. Make sure that where they're working, when they're working full time, they get paid what they should get paid, and they have family time when they get home.
I think that we'll probably bring that back up after the break here. But let's take our final break here on the West Side. All 17 odd-numbered state Senate district seats are up for re-election this year. Today we're featuring the candidates from the 31st state Senate district in West Central Wisconsin. It covers Pierce, Pepin, Dunn, Eau Claire, Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties. Some of the communities in the district include places like Independence, Mondovi, Northfield, Trimble, Strum, and Taylor. I'm Rich Kramer. Stay tuned as we pick up our conversation with Democrat Jeff Smith of Eau Claire and Republican Mel Pittman of Plum City. Again, we did invite Green Party candidate Erin Camacho of Fountain City to join us today, but she was unable to attend. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment. We do have Dan on the line, so hang tight, Dan. We'll get right to you when we return.
I'm Jim French.
And I'm Pat French, and we're from Green Bay, Wisconsin. We have public radio on in our cars, in our house. It's a very important part of our life.
And we learn things from them every day. We've chosen to include WPR in our estate plan to make sure it continues.
Include us in your estate plan. Visit WPRLegacy.org.
Support for WPR comes from Al Johnson's Swedish Restaurant and Boutique in Sister Bay, home of Swedish pancakes with lingonberries, open daily from 7 to 3, a Door County tradition since 1949. AlJohnson's.com. Support also comes from Chippewa Valley Hospital, which will soon be Advent Health. They're working together to provide an entire care network close to home, dedicated to empowering patients to feel whole. Details are at AdventHealth.com.
Wisconsin Public Radio has been providing listeners access to their legislative candidates for more than 20 years. We hope that these on-air discussions give listeners and candidates the opportunity to personally connect over important issues. I'm Rich Kramer. Today on the West Side, we're talking with the candidates from two of the three candidates from the 31st State Senate District race. They face off November 6th, which is... it's so close. It's crazy. It feels like it's been going forever, but we're almost through, folks. The winner will head to Madison to represent Pierce, Pepin, Dunn, Eau Claire, Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties for a four-year term. Voters in the 31st come from places like El Paso, Whitehall, Wamondi, Weston, and Trempealeau. Republican Mel Pittman and Democrat Jeff Smith are joining us in the studio today. The invite was made to Green Party candidate Erin Camacho, but for whatever reason, she was unable to attend. If you've got a question or a comment, we can still take a few. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call to speak directly with two of the three candidates vying to represent you. Election day is 1 week away from tomorrow. What issues would you like your potential representatives to address? We're getting close to the top of the hour, but we still have some time. 1-800-228-5615. With that, Dan in Birchwood has been waiting for a while. Dan, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call, Rich, and I want to thank both the gentlemen on the debate for putting themselves out there as candidates for public office. You know, it takes a lot of courage and time. But my question for both candidates is related to climate change. we own a small business fishing resort up here in Birchwood, and we're seeing the impacts of human-caused climate change with warmer waters, which is leading to the decline of cold water fish like muskie and walleye and trout, things that people come north to fish, or seeing torrential downpours that are washing out roads. We had some guests who had to leave early this summer because their houses in the southern part of the state were flooded. And we're seeing shorter winters, which, you know, if we don't have snow up here for things like the Birkebeiner or cross-country skiing or ice fishing, people aren't coming up here and spending their dollars in our businesses and staying at our hotels, et cetera. So it's something that is very concerning to us as people in the tourism industry, and I'd like to hear what the candidates' plans are for addressing climate change and bringing some good-paying clean energy jobs into this part of the state, because we don't have any coal or oil or natural gas reserves in Wisconsin, and so relying on those resources, we're spending billions of dollars in other parts of the country and creating jobs there instead of spending that money here making clean renewable energy and putting people to work installing solar panels and wind turbines, etc. So thank you again to the candidates, and I look forward to hearing their answers.
Hey, thanks for the call, Dan. Good stuff there. I appreciate it. Let's start with Jeff Smith. So what do you tell speaking of torrential downpours, the 31st has gotten nailed, I think, twice in the last 4, 5, 6 years. A lot of washouts, which costs local governments, state government, et cetera, money. So what do you tell people like Dan?
Well,
Jeff Smith.
Dan, you're right on. We've got to admit this is a real, there's a real human-caused climate change that's real. It's genuine. What's happened is the big money corporate interests have decided, well, the only way we're going to continue to make profits and not be forced to make changes is to convince people that it's not real. That's what, even though, I mean, it's actually immoral what they've been doing, trying to convince people. It's like the tobacco companies who knew that they were poisoning people, decided to convince people rather than admit that they were. This is the same thing. Corporations have decided to convince people that it's not real, so they don't have to make changes, which can be cut into their profits. And as a state, and when I was a legislator, it was just so embarrassing and shameful that we were having to fight this fight, when in fact the best possible economic boost we might have would be clean energy. This is the fastest growing economic area in our country. We should be investing into solar, investing into wind, and it's only going to get better. I know there's all sorts of, you know, it's not perfect. We can't store it, and you know the batteries aren't. All that thing is only going to get better and better and better and better. And so we have to really push our efforts into those areas, boost the economy, but more importantly, save our environment. And finally, you know, when you mention the events that we're having, let's look at the fact. This is my great example is that we allowed Ashley Furniture to build on a wetland, and then we've had these 100-year floods every couple of years come through Arcadia. Why is that? Because they've lost their wetland to a factory. And the same thing now is happening in southeastern Wisconsin, where Foxconn is building on 26 acres of wetland, and it was filled with water recently. And there's a reason for a wetland. It's dry 90% of the time, but when we have episodes of rain, that's where it's supposed to go. It's a natural way that it takes care of itself. These are the sorts of things we got to quit doing. We've got to take into control and say, look, there's reason for regulation. There's reason for science. And it's all for the betterment of all of us.
So what can government do, state government, what state senators do to try to spur this sector of the economy, the green energy? Because we're seeing, you know, wind turbines go up. There's some local fights within, I don't know if it's over in Eldoran, and I can't think of the name of the town, but Emerald.
Could be.
Yeah, so anyway, Cylon, and anyway, people don't necessarily want these things in their backyard. So first of all, what does government do to try to jumpstart this green economy that you're talking about?
We need incentives. We need to help home buyers, in fact, and maybe homeowners who do who fix up their, who do more work on their homes, make changeovers. We need incentives that the government will subsidize, will give them tax breaks. Instead, our tax breaks are going to corporations like Foxconn. We could be turning around and actually giving our subsidies to regular people who put their efforts into energy, including factories, including corporations, including businesses. So it's business and homes, all those things. We need to have regulation. We need to bring scientists back to the DNR and start listening to them.
Mel Pittman. So what do you say to Dan? He's got a business that could be in jeopardy because of the changes that we're seeing in the climate. Do you believe that those are human caused, as Dan mentioned? And what do you tell people like that, that are worried about what's happening with our weather?
Well, thanks for the question, Dan. And as a farmer, I'm very well aware of how our weather impacts my business also. And you're right, we have seen rainfalls that have come not just a half inch at a time, but 5 and 6 inches at a time. And the flooding areas, when they happen, when we have a lot of hills and valleys, that water congregates into a narrow path and it does a lot of damage. So you're right about one thing. Climate change is happening. The question remains, you know, how much of it is human caused by humans and how much is just naturally occurring? And that question can be debated from now until the old saying on the farm, until the cows come home. But so I'll just leave it at that. I'll agree with you that climate change is happening, but I'm not sure how much is human caused by humans. When we talk about renewable energy sources, those are important to keep working on, clean energy. But we, you know, wind towers, the wind doesn't always blow. Everybody wants their light switch to work. Everybody wants their computer to come on when they turn it on. So we have to have a base form of electricity generated. Solar panels, they work good when the sun's shining. When the sun's not shining, they don't work so good. But the technology is changing. You know, solar panels will be more prominent in the future. And one of the better ways of doing that, rather than putting them on an individual house, is to have the solar gardens, the solar industry within our regional electric co-ops. And homeowners can actually buy into those and actually own a piece of that. But yet it's maintained by the cooperative where they have the knowledge and they know how to take care of it so it's functioning at a maximum level. And when we talk about batteries that we use for storing energy, lithium happens to be a primary element. But lithium also, have you ever seen a lithium mine? I've seen a picture of a lithium mine. And if you think that, you know, concern about our environment, that lithium mine is a giant hole in the ground, and it's not the most prettiest thing you want to see. And Jeff mentioned, my opponent mentioned about wetlands being taken out. Well, when we have, whether it's Ashley Furniture or any other company, when an acre of wetland is taken out, they need to replace that with 2 acres of wetland area somewhere else close by. So to say that wetland, taking out wetlands is the reason why we're having the floods and everything else is not accurate at all. When they have to replace those wetland acres with double the number, I don't think that that's a factor at all. And the wetlands also serve as that major source of getting the water into our water table.
So I wanted to touch on immigration. We have a wonderful piece that our intern, Taylor Pomisal, did here for WPR. Unfortunately, we are running short on time, so I'm not sure we're going to be able to get in and play the whole thing. But basically, she went within the 31st Senate District and talked to a farm that uses undocumented workers. They provide documents that show that they are in the country legally, but sometimes those documents are not necessarily legitimate. So the point is, undocumented, you know, migrant labor is so important to the dairy industry and all agriculture in Wisconsin, but yet you've got farmers in a tough spot where they need the work, they need the help, but there's also these laws that kind of contradict that, where these farmers are tiptoeing the line. So we saw the 83 arrests in Wisconsin conducted by ICE agents, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Tony Evers has talked about, he's the Democrat running for governor. There's been talk for years about provisional driver's licenses for migrant workers and a whole host of other things to try to make a system where we can use the labor without running afoul of the law. So I wanted to start, I guess, with Mel Pittman and then quickly to Jeff Smith. This immigration issue, being in agriculture, I'm sure you're aware of that. It's a big part and a big issue. So how do we address that at the state level?
Well, you're right. Immigrants do play a key role in agriculture and our food industry. And so many of them are on dairy farms where there's a stable work available for them. And they're here for one reason, mainly. They're here to earn an income. A lot of times that money goes back to support their families back home, and that's fine. I don't have an issue with that. But, you know, a couple things here. I read an article for the dairy industry in the United States. By the year 2025, half the cows in the United States will be milked by robots. So the issue of having enough immigrant laborers to milk the cows is going to change somewhat over the next 7 years. And the issue of having them, allowing them to go to and from work or go to town, that's really important that they know what the law of the land is. And so if they need to have a driver's license permit, something of that sort, but it only allows them to drive on our roads, I would be in favor of that, only because I think it's important that they understand the rules of the road and regulations so that it's a safety issue for all of us on the road.
Mel Pittman, thank you for that. Jeff Smith, how do we tackle this issue?
Let's keep in mind, first of all, that the only people who are not immigrants in this country are the first Americans, the first members of First Nations.
Mm-hmm.
We're all immigrants. And so when I was in the legislature, I'll just say this because I know we're all running out of time. When I was in the legislature in the last budget in 2009, I was fighting with Pedro Colon down in Milwaukee to have the driver's license piece in the budget that year.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't convince enough legislators who didn't have the courage to have that in there, which made no sense to me because whether you're conservative or liberal, that makes a lot of sense. To put people in, to have these driver's license where you can record where they are, you can give them the proper training to drive and help our economy.
I'm sorry to cut it short, but that's our time for this week's West Side. I'd like to thank the candidates for joining me today, the 31st Senate District candidates, two of the three. Jeff Smith is the Democrat from Eau Claire. Thank you, Jeff. Mel Pittman is the Republican from Plym City. Thank you, Mel. And apologies to Aaron Camacho. Whatever happened, we wish that she could have joined us for this discussion, but that is what it is. So, as always, thanks to our callers and our listeners and to Team Westside. Tune in next Monday morning at 10 for a rebroadcast of the 29th State Senate District Debate.